Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host, as always, is Dr. James Dobson.
And I'm Luann Crane. And Ryan, I hope there are a lot of young parents listening today, because we know that this generation of young moms and dads really earnestly want to train and disciple their children better. But, Doctor, we also know they really need some help.
And we're going to offer it today. Yes. I'm very pleased to have Dr. Meg Meeker back with us today. She's a pediatrician in private practice with her husband, who's also a pediatrician and an internist.
Yes.
And it's good to have you here. You live in Michigan, but you've been willing to come here to Colorado to do the program. And we talked the last time you were here about postpartum depression.
Yes.
If there are folks out there who are having a problem with that, or you have a granddaughter or someone in your family who is asking questions about it, they really ought to get a copy of that, or just go to our archives on the app, and you hit one button and you can get any program we've done.
Absolutely. DrJamesDobson.org would be the place to start online, or the app, as you
just
said.
Just send $200 and we'll call it even. Meg, it's good to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me back.
And we're going to go symbolically to your office, to your examining room today.
Great.
And anticipate or replay the questions that are asked of you about babies and toddlers.
Yes.
All right.
Great.
We talked about birth last time. This time we're going to talk about the first 2 or 3 years.
Great.
And let's start with some of the fundamentals. We mentioned breastfeeding last time, but there's a lot of controversy over that. People have very, very strong feelings about it.
Yes.
And there are pros and cons, and people don't know that there can be cons. Mm-hmm. Talk about it.
Yeah, sure. I think that, you know, it's a very loaded issue. It's a very emotionally charged issue, feeding of our children and breastfeeding our children. And I think that it's very important for mothers to realize from the time your baby's born that you, mom, are wired with everything you need to parent your child beautifully.
Wow, that was worth tuning in right there. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Meeker.
You know, God knows what he's doing, and he gives us all the wiring. The problem is we don't listen to it. We listen to all the other voices around, and I see this begin right off the bat when mothers are breastfeeding. And typically, mothers will come in when their children are a couple weeks old or 2 months old or 3 months old. And I always ask how breastfeeding is going, and I can tell that mothers are hesitant to tell me any negative experience they're having with breastfeeding because they feel guilty. And the truth of the matter is, for many mothers, breastfeeding is hard. Sometimes it just doesn't work well. Sometimes women are in pain when they do it. They can have mastitis. They can have skin infections. Some women experience mood changes when they're breastfeeding. I mentioned in our previous program that when you put a child at breast, you get a surge of oxytocin. And this can rapidly change your mood. And for some mothers, they'll feel this wave of depression come over them. And that goes away when they stop breastfeeding. Many mothers who work outside the home pump, and they take their breast pumps to work and they freeze their milk. And pumping can be very hard and it can be quite painful. And I'm saying all of this not to tell mothers what to do. I'm saying this because we have this feeling that breastfeeding is this wonderful, lovely, easy, natural, intuitive thing that all mothers are supposed to do, know how to do, and we're to glide right through it. And usually that's not the case. I believe it's a mother's choice whether she breastfeeds her baby or not. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics would probably rap me over the head for saying that. I don't care. however, because my goal is to help moms enjoy being mothers. And so much of the joy is taken away because we feel we need to jump through all of the great mom hoops that moms have planted for us out there. And breastfeeding our babies until they're two is one of those first hoops that we must jump through. Breastfeeding, of course, offers the best nutrition for your baby. Now, many people think that if I breastfeed my baby for 18 months or 2 years old, they won't have any allergies. That's not true. The reality is breast milk helps protect children from allergies, and it works primarily through the gut. It doesn't offer a lot of what we call seroimmunity, blood immunity. And what parents need to understand is the best protection immunity a baby has from 0 to 3 months comes through the placenta. It comes through having mother's antibodies floating in their bloodstream for the first 3 months of life. And so that's important for parents to understand, that the best immunity you give your child is really through birth.
Now, Meg, I can envision a chorus of women out there who are angry right now because they feel so emotionally about the fact that everybody who can ought to do this. And one of the things you hear is that there are nutrients and the milk was designed for a baby, whereas cow's milk was designed for calves. And they will make this argument. Respond to it.
You're right.
There is some truth to that.
Absolutely.
Too.
And breast milk is best for babies. We know that. It's best for babies. But we live in a broken world, and there are many mothers out there who literally can't breastfeed all the time because they've got other children, they have a job to go to, it stresses them out. And so
it isolates them.
That's right.
And so I always advocate breastfeeding as long as a mother can do it. And it does offer better immunity for child, but it isn't liquid gold. It's just breast milk. It's wonderful. It's part of the nutrition that we want to offer our children. Mm-hmm. But there are other things we need to offer them, too. I'm an advocate because this is what I did, because I was a working mom at times, and I had a husband who wanted to be very intimately involved in the childcare of our children when they're babies. He loved to rock our kids, and he wanted to feed them. That was a great dad bonding time. And if you're exclusively breastfeeding your baby, unless you're pumping and putting milk into a bottle, how is dad to feed the baby? Now, many mothers will say, well, there's nipple confusion. I don't want to give them a bottle because they won't take the breast. The truth of the matter is you can adapt a baby to feed any way you want the baby to. It just takes a little bit of work. So what I did, and many mothers in my practice do, is they primarily breastfeed, but for one or two feedings a day as a baby gets older, they offer them formula through a bottle. And I think that it's also very important to draw dads in, because I think that sometimes subconsciously, we moms can push dads out of the picture by saying to them without words, by our feeding practices, you're not needed here. Mm-hmm. It's me and the baby. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair to the child.
You know, that happened in my family. My mom
really?
And dad were great parents, but my dad so loved my mother that when I was born, my mother was so committed to me that she made my dad feel unnecessary. They told me this when I was grown, that my dad was jealous of me. This is early on, probably the first 3 months. She was meeting my needs, but was not meeting his. And you have to be careful about that.
You have to be very careful, because that's a pattern you can establish early on in infancy, and it won't go away. And there are many fathers out there who feel like second fiddle. Mm-hmm. I've had dads tell me, I don't live in the center of my home, I orbit. Mm. And how sad is that? Because I believe that children need mom and dad bonding with them in a very intimate way, spending, you know, a lot of time hugging them, touching them, time with them, talking to them, singing to them. And they need that more than they need exclusive feeding from their mother. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not advocating not breastfeeding. I'm advocating it's mom's choice.
Sure.
It's our freedom, and I believe that God will tell each of us what we should do. The other point I wanted to make is physicians really don't know how long is best to breastfeed. We know that the best nutrients and immunity come from the colostrum, which is the first milk that comes out. So how much more do we need to give? Obviously, it's best the longer you can give it, the better. But I really feel it's important for mothers not to live with the burden of expectation that they must be their child's everything. And that's a burden that we women have put on other women. And that's the very reason I wrote my book, 10 Habits for Happy Moms, because we live with expectations on ourselves from infancy of our children on that are way out of whack.
Well, we struggled with this in my household. When Lincoln was born, my wife, Laura, had some serious medical complications that required her to be on medication that prevented her from breastfeeding. But every now and then, she'd be feeding Lincoln with a bottle, and women would make these snide remarks to her. And
it's wrong.
You can't yell back and you can't say mean things back, but she's thinking, I want to. I desperately wanted to do that, and I can't. I physically can't. My doctor won't allow it. And here these people are passing judgment on someone who can't help her situation.
Exactly. And I think that making mothers feel less than good moms because they can't breastfeed or they choose not to breastfeed is really cruel. What about adoptive moms? Are we saying to them, well, you know, you'll never really have the bond with your baby that I do because I breastfed my baby? How haughty is that? And I think that's what we women are doing to one another, and I think we need to stop it. And the only way to do that is to have programs like this and say, listen, mom, it's your choice. It really is. And God will let you know what you need to do to be a really great mom to your kids. So listen to your heart.
But when you say you encourage them to breastfeed as long as they can, even if that's only 1 or 2 weeks, is that still worth
it? You bet. Because they still get the colostrum, the first milk, yes.
Dr. Meeker, before we leave this, address the family who has older children and the whole privacy issue. What about the woman who is concerned that she's nursing at home and is perhaps uncovered and then another child comes in? Is that going to scar them for life?
No, it's not going to scar them for life. It may scar their friends for life because you don't want to see your best friend's mom breastfeeding. No, it certainly won't. And breastfeeding, of course, is a beautifully natural thing. I think that modesty is important, and I think that covering yourself. But if an older child walks in on you, they walk in on you. And I think that if the mother who is breastfeeding in that situation responds in a very matter-of-fact fashion, oh, well, you caught me, that's how the child will take it and respond.
Okay, let's go back to your examining room, and you've got a mother who's come in, and she is not getting the sleep that she needs, and neither is her husband because the baby doesn't sleep. And we're not talking just about infants, but those who are 1 and 2 and 3 who have sleep problems. You talk in your books about sleep training.
Yes.
What do you mean by
yes.
that?
This is what all parents need to know is that most kids until they're over 2 years of age don't quote unquote sleep through the night. They wake up every few hours, they look around, and then they figure out if they're going to call mom and dad or if they're going to go back to sleep. So our job as parents is to train them to be okay in their cribs, to understand they're safe and to not wake us up. Because parents can't force children to sleep. The best we can do is to train them to feel safe and secure in their cribs and to learn to just stay quiet for a 10 or 12 hour period. So what I usually recommend to parents is the first 2 or 3 months of a child's life, anything's fair game. You know, children come out and they've got their days and nights mixed up and they don't know how to sleep. They don't know how to self-soothe and they don't know how to put themselves back to sleep. So sleep training is really about encouraging a child on how to self-soothe and put himself back to sleep.
How do you do that?
Well, that's a great question. I tell parents that you know your child's ready for sleep training when they have gone through an 8 or 10 hour period on their own without interrupting your sleep, without waking you up. Then you know that nutritionally the child doesn't need to be fed in the night. You know that they're ready to stay in their crib for a longer time, and that usually happens around 3 or 4 months of age. And this is where life gets a bit tricky and tough for mothers. But I say, you know, parenting is not for wimps, so this is where you have to sort of get nerves of steel. But what we want to do, and think about it from a child's perspective, I encourage parents that when they put the child into the bed, they have about a 15-minute routine. before the child goes to bed. That's the child's cues. Here we go. Mm-hmm. It's going to be nighttime. It's going to be sleep time. You sing, you rock, you may feed them. And just as the child is falling off to sleep, but they're not asleep yet, you put them in the crib. And parents, the big mistake most parents make is they put the child in their bed asleep because they don't want the child to cry. Think about it as a child. You're put in bed asleep. An hour or two goes by. You wake up. It's a dark room. And the last thing you remember is being in your mom's arms, and now you've been tricked. So you're mad. Mm-hmm. So you call and say, where did you go? And they call to get you back in the room. So really what you want to communicate to the child is it's nighttime. I'm going to leave. You're perfectly safe in your crib. If you run and rescue the child all the time, you're telling them, you're really not safe there. I'll come get you. So that's one of the first mistakes parents make in sleep training.
That requires the parents to have nerves of steel because the crying may go on for some time. And you should not panic when that
exactly.
occurs.
How long should you let a child cry and around what ages?
Yeah, it really depends on the age. Parents are very frightened for the children to cry because they believe that crying means the child has a need that must be met and they're not meeting it. So they are damaging their child if they let them cry. Mm-hmm. That's really not true. A child can only cry. They can't talk. They can't jump up out of their crib. They can't say, Mom, Mom, I hurt. They can't do anything to express themselves, to express their frustration, their pain, their whatever. But cry. The average child cries 2 hours in a 24-hour period. Mm. So if you have a 3 or 4 month old and they cry for 20 minutes, that's not going to psychologically damage your child. You stroke their back, you talk to them quietly, not in a loud voice, and you tell them it's okay, it's nighttime, go to sleep. And you go back into the room as many times as possible to reassure them, but you don't get them out of the crib. Mm. If you do get them out of the crib, be prepared to do that night after night after night. Mm-hmm. And if you have an older child, and I have kids in my practice who are 18 months, 2 years old, and who won't stay in their cribs at night and sleep, and they stand up in that crib and they grab hold of those bars and they scream and they shake that crib. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying is, you get in here, Mom, I'm mad, feed me. Mm-hmm. They're just having temper tantrums in the night. And Mom runs in because she doesn't want him to cry because she again feels, if I don't respond, I'm not meeting his needs. Mm-hmm. That's not true. So parents can establish healthy patterns of sleep training and not getting them out of the crib early on when the kids are 3 to 4 months of age, very important.
You know, our daughter, Danae, got into one of those bad habits of waking up 3 or 4 times a night, and it was a habit. There was not any reason for it. She wasn't all that hungry, and we realized that we had allowed this pattern to develop. And so one night, we went through the process you're talking about of assuring her, and we put her in her crib, and she began to cry about an hour later, and she cried, and she cried, and she cried, and she cried. It must have been 2 hours. It felt like all night long. And then she went to sleep. Do you know that ended it?
That's it. Mm. Exactly. I'll tell you why this is important. Let's imagine we have now a 6-month-old child who's waking 2, 3, 4 times in the middle of the night. Typically, what a very conscientious, kind, overzealous mother or dad will do is run into the child's room, pick them up out of the crib, feed them, breastfeed them, offer them a bottle, and rock them back to sleep. Well, really, that's not healthy for the child for a couple reasons. What you've said to them is, yes, you need me in the night. You're not safe in your crib, so I'm going to help you. Mm. Secondly, once you start feeding in the middle of the night, you're training the stomach to want to be fed in the middle of the night because you're training their internal clock to say, whoops, it's 3 in the morning. Now I need something to eat. And I often tell mothers, if your husband brought you your favorite food at 3 in the morning, woke you up and said, honey, here's your cheesecake, you can bet that the second and the third and the fourth night, you'd wake up wanting that cheesecake, right? So it's very important not to feed them in the night. Again, I'm talking about older kids who are bigger and healthy and 15, 16 pounds. If they scream and they have temper tantrums and they wail, oh, well, that's what they do. it's very important to train them to stay in their crib and to let them cry and to soothe them, but to not get them out of the crib, because you need your sleep in order to be a better mom. Remember, it's about being a healthier, happier mother, because you're going to parent better during the day if you have 8 hours of sleep. That's not selfish, moms. It's important to get good sleep. It's also important for your child to stay in a restful state for 8 to 10 hours, because if they're overtired, they can't go to sleep and they're a wreck during the day.
Psychologists refer to that as reinforcement or rewarding. Whatever you reward will recur.
Yes.
I mean, it's true if you're trying to train a bear to walk on his hind legs. You give him a morsel of food. Whatever succeeds will tend to be reinforced. Mm-hmm. So if you provide that pleasurable experience of being cuddled and rocked and sung to and fed and put back to bed, and do that 4 or 5 times a night, guess what's going to happen?
It's going to do it.
You are rewarding something that is not healthy.
It's not healthy for the child.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Meeker, I know there are hundreds of books on this specific topic, but I'm sure there's a parent right now who's got maybe a 7-month-old, and she's thinking, uh-oh, I've blown it so far, but now my child is teething, and I don't quite know, where do I start? Mm-hmm. I put them in the crib, and they wake up, and they cry, but they've had 7 months of reinforcement, as you just said, Dad. How do I start this process without going crazy and without having my kid go crazy?
Yeah, can I correct it if I...
Oh, absolutely. This is what I tell parents. Pick out a 7-day period. You won't need all 7 days. But you pick out a 7-day period when you are going to sleep train and get ready for it. You tell your husband, you say you need his help, and this is what's going to happen. When that time starts, you can start it in a month, you can start it tomorrow, whenever you want. The only thing that you are going to accomplish in those next 7 days, even if you never leave the house, is to get the child to stay quietly in his crib from the time you put him to bed until the time you get him up in the morning. And in 25 years, I have never had a child take longer than 5 days to break.
Wow.
Never, ever. And I've waited, and I've told this to many parents, and this is what she does. She does her 15 minutes routine. She puts her child in bed not completely asleep. The child's angry because he's usually asleep when he goes to bed. So expect your child to be very mad because you're changing the rules now. So expect the temper tantrums. You put him in bed. He may sleep for an hour. He wakes up. He's mad. You go back in there and you soothe him. And she finds, but I go in and I rub his back and he gets madder. So maybe you need to stay out of the room. Well, but if I stay out of the room, he will cry for 3 hours. And I say, I know. But he won't cry for 3 hours night after night. He'll do it one, maybe two nights, and then he'll get it and he'll go, okay, I'm done.
That was
I'm
our
stay
experience.
Here. And I'll tell you 99% of the time that's how it goes. It's also important that mom make sure that the crib is a safe, wonderful place to be. Make sure your child takes naps in the crib during the day whenever possible. Because if you only put them there at night, it's a strange place. It's not a safe place. So often you can start by giving them naps during the day in their crib. Very important thing to do.
Once again, our time has scurried by, and we have not talked about sudden infant death syndrome. And we must talk about that. Many parents are very concerned and panicked over the possibility of the child dying suddenly. SIDS is what we're talking about. And we have to offer some reassurance and some advice. I want you to give a short answer here because we're really out of time. And then if you'll be with us next time, that will be first on the agenda. Okay?
Sure. The most important thing we can do is to make sure that a baby is on a firm mattress, a crib mattress. I do not advocate kids sleeping in parents' bed. The mattresses are too soft. Lay the baby on his side, and you can rotate right side to left side or his back or her back. And I advocate kids not having a full tummy before they go to bed at night. I think those are the most important things a parent can do.
Good short answer, but we'll deal with it in greater detail next time.
Great.
It is an important topic and one that parents are panicked over for very good reason. Will you come back?
I'd love to.
You better.
Oh, how blessed are we to get our questions answered on issues like this from such experts. And for those parents who want to hear more solid parenting advice, we'll invite you to be with us next time.
And of course, we also recommend you stop by drjamesdobson.org for more parenting resources, including many of Dr. Meg Meeker's books, as well as Dr. James Dobson's classic titles. Ryan, these are just books that every parent should have on their shelf.
Absolutely. And again, you'll find those along with all other parenting resources in our solid answers section at drjamesdobson.org.
Of course, if you prefer to call us, maybe to even ask a specific parenting question, our number is 877-732-6825.
You know, providing this kind of practical help for parents is right in the bullseye of what Family Talk is trying to do for families. And if you'd like to help us in our mission to equip families to be better parents and better spouses, you can donate at drjamesdobson.org or on our Family Talk app.
Or you can donate while you're on the line with us. One last time, that number, 877-732-6825. Well, Ryan, I really enjoyed this time together today, and I'm sure listeners did too.
Well, if they did, if you did, we hope you'll make time for us tomorrow for more with Dr. Meg Meeker right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.